Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Ugh. Spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine. Discounts. Appointments. Online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom. Blocked. No more interruptions. No more stress. Stay connected. Stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Welcome to the Barry Podcast, where the Lorehounds, your guides to being remembered as the hero. I'm John.
And I'm David, and this is our coverage of the HBO original series, Barry.
In this podcast, we'll be giving an overview of the series finale of Barry, Season 4, Episode 8, Wow, as well as our thoughts on the season as a whole.
If you're interested in getting early and ad-free access to all of our podcasts and some occasional exclusive content, check us out at patreon.com/thelorehounds. We are on a little bit of a membership drive. We're hoping to break 100 subscribers by the end of July. We're preparing a really cool thank you gift that we're going to send out to everyone who subscribed at the end of July as a way to say thanks for all the support and just everything that this community has given to us, because July is our 1-year anniversary. So we're pretty excited about that.
We sure are.
Yeah, it's wild to think about how far this thing has come. Anyway, if Patreon's not your bag, but you still want to give us a little bit of a leg up, consider giving us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can do the star ratings or maybe a couple of words in the review. We read all the reviews. The ratings really do help us in the standing, helps other people find the podcast. And, you know, they just give us those warm little fuzzies that make this all worthwhile.
A quick reminder that this is a short form version of our recap style podcast that we're doing for Barry this season. This is our last episode, but, you know, feel free to send in feedback if you want. We probably won't be able to read it on air, but we'll definitely read it with our eyes.
And that said, you can send emails to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com or head over to our website and use a contact form or even the voicemail message if you want to send us a message. All of that said, the conversation's still rolling on our Discord server. We've got a channel set up there for just for Barry. And folks are chit-chatting about the show. So if you got something to say or you want to, you know, talk about what you thought about the season overall or the series overall, drop a note there. You can find the link in the show notes below.
Cool. Well, David, this is the end of Barry in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Give me your thoughts on just the episode first.
Just the episode. Interesting. I was able to catch the episode twice. I don't think you can take this episode without taking the season overall. And I thought the episode did the job that it needed to do, and it did it really well. It really was a wow moment.
Yeah.
Um, And I'm still processing what I saw and what I saw over the course of the season in this series. But the episode was the capstone to this season. That is for sure. And I thought it tied up everything nicely. I feel good about it. I feel good about the episode, and I feel good about the season. So I don't know. It's hard to pigeonhole the episode.
I know.
Because
I figured
it really
a couple
was
general designed. Thoughts first.
What's that?
I figured it would be a couple general thoughts first. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's good. It was a very good episode of television.
Yeah. The pacing of this episode really surprised me, but it delighted me in the end. Mm-hmm. You know, I was riveted throughout it. I was always like, "Oh my God, what's going to happen next?" But things were not at the cadence we've been trained to expect.
Uh-huh.
And that was really interesting to see. And it was very true to form for Barry. Because, you know, you don't have that heroic moment. And we'll get to that. We don't have that blaze of glory death for Barry.
Right.
We don't have the action coming at the very end. We had sort of this almost disappointing for Barry storyline. And I think that it was so disappointing for Barry that it was satisfying for us. And that is such a weird Bill Hader thing that I don't think anyone else would have been able to pull off like this.
It really is an extraordinary body of work.
Yeah.
For Bill Hader. And it's really it's very much an auteur style film. I was thinking about this today. I'm actually traveling a little bit, and I'm in the city, and I was on the subway listening to some other coverage and thinking about it and writing some notes. And I was thinking that to me, this is not unlike a novelist's first novel or a conductor's first symphony that they've written. Or, you know, some other artist who has been consuming a lot of their art or processing or working with it. And then, hey, I'm going to go write my first novel, or I'm going to, you know, produce my first movie or television series. And, you know, from whole cloth, not somebody else's script or not somebody else's story, something that I've created. And it feels like there's this creative logjam that was in Bill Hader's head. That when HBO gave him the show and the budget and the actors and the whole thing, he has increasingly all of that creativity that has just been in his head is just been released. And this is the flood of it coming out in a very coherent story, in a very well-told story. But it was so cinematic. It was so sumptuous. It was so horrific. It was such social commentary on so many levels. The series and this episode just work on so many levels. It's really kind of hard to process. I almost feel like we're not doing it justice by trying to do this short. We thought, it's going to be a funny 30-minute end of the season. No, this is a much bigger show than I think a lot of us realize. And I think it's going to do something. I think it's going to alter the course of television production, but not in an overt way, in a very subtle way, like a big boulder under the water, right? You can see that it's there. You can see that there's something there, but you're not sure exactly what it's doing, but it's shaping the flow of the stream. And I don't know how this show is going to do that down the road, but I do think that there is something here that is substantial that's going to alter the course of television making.
Yeah, I agree. I will say, I think that HBO or Max, whatever it is now,
it's still HBO.
Did sort of a disservice to Barry by sticking it at 10 after a huge show.
Uh-huh.
After Succession.
Yes.
I think that this absolutely could have been a 9 o'clock on Sunday. Like, imagine you just finished Succession. And you need something else. And now Barry is going to be your Sunday night show. I think that would have been a lot better for this show.
I have been watching Succession. You and I are both sort of on record of being like, we're not interested in covering it for a variety of reasons. But then I decided to parachute in on season 4 without watching 1 through 3. It's an extraordinary show. I think we'll talk about it in our next Patreon exclusive show.
We will, because I started it from the beginning yesterday. Oh,
okay. So we have a lot to talk about then.
We do.
That said, there's no way that I could watch an average episode of Succession back to back with a season four episode of Barry. There's no way. This season is so dark and so twisted and so confronting that trying to go from Succession to this would have been an insane thing to do. So yeah, I've had to delay my Barry watching.
I hear
for that reason.
I hear you. Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, this has been my only Sunday night show, so I haven't had that issue. But I can imagine, as someone who's seen 1.5 episodes of Succession, I can imagine that it's hard to, do that back to back.
Well, and Succession is ending as well, right? So
So the stakes have never been higher for both.
Never been higher. And let's talk a little bit. Maybe I don't know if you want to talk about this now, but about the ending of the series.
Sure. Yeah. Let's do the overall season thoughts now here.
And yes. Thoughts. So you've been a Barry stan from the get.
I watched season one week to week.
Right. And you're big. You were big on the show and have been. How do you feel at the end of the season of the series?
Not a single bad episode.
Wow.
Not a single one.
Yeah.
And that is something to be extraordinarily proud of. Mm-hmm. In this day of television where, I feel like almost every even great show has a bum episode. Right. And that's not the case in this show. I couldn't tell you one episode where I was like, that was disappointing. I've been devastated by an episode. I've been depressed by an episode, right. But it was still great TV.
Yeah.
And I'm just grateful for this show. I think that I'm going to have to rewatch it because it's very similar to Breaking Bad in that it really does tell an interesting story about the human condition through the downfall of one man.
Yeah.
And it's a masterpiece, I think. I really do think it's a masterpiece in a lot of ways, in both writing, in acting, in even like the cinematography and the way that they've framed these horrific scenes as comedy scenes. I mean, the comedy of this show, and, it was certainly less of a comedy towards the end, but the comedy of this show was always just so unique, and I've never seen anything like it. And I hope I see more like it.
Mm.
It almost puts a funhouse mirror up to life and up to horrific situations and says, hey, it's kind of ridiculous when you look at it from a wide shot, huh?
You're right. Or, I know we're going to get more into some of the specifics, but I think putting a finger on that point that you're making right now with the scene of him leaving the store with all the guns strapped to his back.
Right.
So, and that scene, I think, encapsulate a lot of what Barry this season has been and the series overall. So here's this crazy man. He storms into the store. There's the clerk and he wild-eyed look, and he demands guns, right. Which is a funny line. And it kind of calls back to, the Matrix, right? And haha, we're sort of laughing at some of this stuff. And then as he's strapped up and walking out of the store, it's horrific.
Right.
Because he's walking down the children's toy aisle and we have an epidemic of gun death in this country that's particularly affecting our children. So I was just watching in horror as nobody was paying attention to him.
Right.
They were completely oblivious. And that is kind of feels like what we're doing. And then as he strolls out into the parking lot, again, da 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 da. And then he gets into the car with all this stuff strapped to his back. And it's hilarious.
Right. Because he can't fit. Now, let me just say, this was not a realistic scene if it's happening in California.
Right.
But I overlooked that. I literally said to my wife, I was like, well, that wouldn't happen in California, but fine. Yeah. Let's move the plot forward here.
Yeah. And let's do that because there's the social commentary, there's the horror, the sort of American Gothic vibe that he's created throughout the show. There's the comedy, the dark comedy to it all. So it was a brilliant shot too. The follow shot as he's walking out, and it was one take from the moment he starts walking down that aisle all the way out to getting in the car. So brilliant on a production level. And I think that the whole show gets encapsulated into that one scene there. And there's so much to enjoy and to be horrified at and to laugh at.
Yeah.
It's really an extraordinary piece of work. And I think I have to agree with you that there is, I can't think of even a sour note in this whole season. Like, oh, you could have one episode where the B plot was a little meh, you know?
Right.
But none of that. It was all excellent and superb this whole season long.
And I think one of the things that Barry did right is it worried less about having every detail match up and more about how would these characters react emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been talking about Ted Lasso and my gripes over there about certain plot lines. And maybe if it were operating on as high of a level as Barry, because I do think Barry operates on a higher level as far as what it does to me emotionally,
mm-hmm.
I think that I would buy it more, you know? And I think that Barry really hit every note that I needed it to hit to make me suspend my disbelief enough to not worry about, as Alan Sepinwall has said, cartoon logic, which is always present in Barry.
Right. And this, the Barry did it in 8 and pretty much all within, you know, plus or minus the half hour mark.
Yeah.
Where Ted Lasso this season had 12 and they were going 45, 50 minutes, even an hour, I think, in an episode or two.
Right. And Barry also didn't add several side characters and side plots, which I still think was a bit of a misstep for Ted Lasso.
Right.
But, I mean, Ted Lasso is great. Join us on that podcast because we're having
a great time. We love it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We're having a great time. I'm just saying, I think as far as like a prestige quality show,
yeah,
Barry is several levels above how well Ted Lasso has operated.
This show feels much more crafted, right? And this goes back to that auteur style. This is a product of Bill Hader's creative vision. He has a vision. And I think what's interesting too, within that vision, he was able to do something that I think is also, interestingly enough, parallel to Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso, we talk a lot about how there's a lot of in-jokes that the writers throw in about rom-coms, about, you know, writing and about culture. And there's a lot of winking and nodding to various things in a kind of way that pushes up against the fourth wall. And I love that. Great. And one of the things that I really think that Barry does in parallel with that is that it's a show written by an actor, written with writers for writers, and it is a show written for actors. And it is every actor that has been in this season has amazing depth and richness to play with their character. And so I think not only did Bill Hader have a point of view and a creative vision, but he was able to do that tricky thing of being able to find collaborators among the writers and the actors and then say to them, okay, this is where we're going. This is my vision. What do you see? How do you think the character is going to respond? What are they going to do? How do you want to play the scene? So not, here he is, not only the director and the showrunner, but the writer and an actor, he has all of that now, and he has created a creative environment where he's empowering all the other actors and writers in this vision. It's extraordinary.
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, I think that especially Henry Winkler was given a ton to work with. Sarah Goldberg was given a ton to work with, and they both knocked it out of the park. And we knew Henry Winkler would because he's a known quantity, but
right.
Sarah Goldberg, I think you had circulated an interview with her where she really is the breakout star of this. I mean, I hope to see her in more things. I think that she nailed every kind of note she was supposed to hit. And I mean, I'm grateful that they gave that role to her because she really brought a lot to the show.
And then you look at Stephen Root's performance as Fuchs. The trajectory and the transformation that he went through. And the same with Noho Hank.
Yeah, Noho Anthony Hank, Kerrigan.
Anthony Kerrigan. At his end, was so moving and so tragic and so just so full of pathos and drama, yeah. You know, just all of them. He just gave them such meaty roles and such interesting characters to play. Yeah, that interview with Sarah Goldberg, and that was on a Slate podcast called Working. And she was talking about her a lot of her stage work and then her process as an actor, and talking about how she was getting into the head of her character, and just the as a byproduct of that, you know, we learn a little bit of behind the scenes of how the Barry season in the show was, you know, produced and how all the actors worked together. And it just sounds like an extraordinarily creative environment for all of these people to really perform at this top level. That was a very special little bubble.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's time we finally get into the meat of it.
You want to stop gushing?
We got to stop gushing. We got to get into the meat of it. Okay. We have enough carbs for days after that conversation.
Woo, sugary goodness.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. All right. We've got three plot lines today. Hank and Fuchs is one. The next one's going to be Barry. And then we're going to close with Sally and John. So here we go. Hank and Fuchs. Hank tells Fuchs Barry is on his way to pick up Sally and John and offers him Barry. Fuchs comes to Hank's office and makes a counteroffer. If Hank admits he killed Cristobal, Fuchs will leave him alone. Fuchs gives a monologue about how we're only able to live with the things we've done if we pretend to be someone else. Hank owns up to killing Cristobal, but cuts the deal off, leading to a shootout which kills Hank and almost everyone else in the room. Hank dies holding the hand of Cristobal's statue. Fuchs, John, and Sally survive, and Fuchs brings John to Barry. The two share a knowing look and part ways. A lot happened here. A lot happened here. This episode was way more Fuchs-centric than I expected it to be.
Hmm. How so?
I mean, I just didn't expect him to be as involved. You know, I mean, the show is called Barry, and I feel like Barry was almost not at his own finale.
He really wasn't. I think his storyline ended a couple, two, three episodes ago.
Yeah. He just was happy, you know, living the quiet life.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if we look at Barry as an individual, the damage, the death and destruction that he's wrought, the lives that he's upended, the, I don't know how to describe this, the morally untethered, the whole thing with the podcast and seeking absolution, right? The moment he found the right podcast to tell him what he wanted to hear, he was like, great, boom, gone. I'm going to go kill this guy. This moral relativism that he expressed through his actions, he was not a good guy, ultimately.
Right.
And even though he's, you know, the title of our show, and I think at some point, and I don't know when, it would require a season rewatch, but I think the character died and or came to the end of his arc a couple of episodes ago, and then he's just been a ghost walking through his life. And there's nothing more that we could do with him as a storyline element. And this really was the natural, and we'll get to his end in a moment. But yeah, sorry to segue too far off there, because it really was not a Barry-centric episode.
Right. But, you know, and I like the way you framed it is, you know, we're meant to be looking at the people that Barry has affected rather than Barry himself, because he is sort of a ghost of his former self. In fact, he's most himself when he's brought back in to be a hitman again, to go kill Gene or Fuchs or Hank or whoever he wants to kill. You know, that's who he is in the end. And the fact that Fuchs sort of takes a look at John and he decides to give him back to Barry with no trouble and not even a word, I think says a lot more about Fuchs than Barry. I think that Fuchs was remorseful for what he did to Barry, I think. Mm. And I think he just wants to not deprive that kid of a father, even a flawed one.
It's interesting. It's interesting that Fuchs had a redemption arc. So Sally and Fuchs have redemption arcs. NoHo Hank and Barry do not, nor does Cousineau. So our sort of our five principles there.
Well, I don't know if Hank didn't have a redemption arc. I think in the end he was honest with himself and he was sort of apologetic to Cristobal and he realized he was dealing with a monster in Fuchs and he refused to work with Fuchs. That's kind of redeeming, I think.
Okay.
But I don't know. I mean, he kind of didn't get the opportunity to finish that redemption arc because he died.
well, we should put a pin in the thing there about the Hank calling the deal off. But rolling back over to Fuchs really quickly to finish that thought up, the character development of him going into prison and then his speech there, or his little monologue, well, not really a monologue, whatever, monologue, I don't know, whatever he was saying.
I'm calling it a monologue.
A monologue about being constantly beat down in prison to the point that until he dropped the pretense and got right with himself now. I mean, there's plenty of self-help methodologies out there in the world. You know, you can take some 3-day courses, you can read some books, you can see a therapist, however you get there, right? Let's hope that most people don't have to be beaten within an inch of their life on a regular.
Right.
But then he faces to who he is, which is a heartless man. Yet the thing that he does at the end of the episode is the most heartful thing.
Well, I think if you asked him, he'd probably say, well, I'm pretending to be a man with a heart. I'm pretending to be the good uncle, the good godfather, whatever I am.
But why do that? Why give John back to Barry? So that he can
forget that he's a man without a heart.
But now doesn't he has now a heart, right? It's a Wizard of Oz story, right? They find the thing that they didn't think that they had. They had it all along.
Yeah.
They just had to have space and a place to be expressed.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I guess it depends how you view the internal versus the external as far as who you are.
Well, which is the brilliance
of complicated. That's super right. Complicated.
But and that's the brilliance of this show is that it takes these situations, these criminals, and it turns them upside down into good corporate businessmen, right?
Right, you know? Right. And, you know, you have the Vonnegut style, we are who we pretend to be. And then you would say, Fuchs does have a heart. Right. And then you listen to Fuchs and he says, well, I don't have a heart, but at least I'm honest with myself now. And I don't know. You know, I think that there's merit to both arguments.
Well, and that's, I think, an important thing is that we have to be honest with ourselves before we can be honest with anybody else, right?
Right.
Well, not that we can't pretend that we can't fake some of that stuff, but when we're honest with ourselves, then we can't be, it's very hard to be dishonest to other people.
Yeah.
And I think we touched about that in the Earthsea stuff with the first book of Wizard of Earthsea with Ursula K. Le Guin. Check out that podcast if you want that conversation, where when the main character understands who he is, then he becomes whole and that then takes him out of being a pawn or manipulated by other forces in the world.
Yeah, it's funny how much you see Earthsea popping up in all the shows we're covering this, you know, marathon. I mean, I feel like we've been talking about Earthsea in Ted Lasso, in Barry, in not in White House Plumbers, because there's no moral lessons to learn from that show. But, you know, in these two shows, I think that this sort of fundamental truth of human nature, which is be true to yourself and things will be a little better, at least. I think that is so widespread in media today and something that we're sort of exploring more in current pop culture that it's kind of really appropriate that we're covering Earthsea while we're covering all these shows because it ends up being sort of our blueprint to how we approach these shows.
Who would have thought that, you know, with Tolkien even in our back pocket, even further there, you know, so we've got a lot of rich material to frame. Who knew modern television was so rooted in
in Ursula Le Guin.
Yeah. So, but I do have to commend the performance, Stephen Root's performance, in that Sally Reed interview. She talks a lot about how in the production of Barry, because they do so many close-ups, oftentimes they're closer physically to the cameraman and having this big piece of equipment really close in their face, and then trying to act and do these very emotional scenes where, and then when they're trying to even connect to their partner, even though maybe their partner's not necessarily on camera in that moment. And so the close-ups of both Anthony Carrigan and Stephen Root in this scene are extraordinary. The face acting, the eye movements, the facial twitches, to act and emote at that level with that much depth to their performance while having this giant piece of equipment shoved right in their faces is extraordinary. And it was gorgeous and just really a beautiful piece of television making.
It was. It was. And yeah, I mean, somebody was comparing it to Tarantino, the way that mm-hmm. they were doing all those close-ups. I think that's a good comparison. Really just the way that they had Hank go out was so perfect.
Yeah. Yes. And oh, my Lord.
I mean, the way he and Anthony Carrigan just looking up at Cristobal and slowly fading away and just thinking of his lover. And, you know, I think also people were saying with the bird sounds fading in.
Yeah.
Was it were they trying to hint at Barry's like Hell Beach?
Yeah.
That's I think that's a good interpretation there.
That's definitely that soundscape definitely reminded me of them being out in the desert. And I was half expecting we were going to get a cut scene to Sally and Bill or Barry out in the desert again. So,
oh, I meant the beach that he went to a couple times when he was hallucinating of all the people he killed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That was more in season 3.
Okay.
But it happened a few times where he's you know, hallucinating or he's unconscious and he sees all the people he killed on the beach.
Okay.
And there were birds there. So people were saying, is this Hank meeting Cristobal on the Hell Beach?
Version of it. Yeah. Could be. The visual of that was just gorgeous, though. It was very much like a classical painting there at the foot of the statue. Even before he fully expires, there's another scene there where he's sitting propped up more. It was just absolutely amazing. And Anthony Carrigan's acting when he breaks down and admits to Cristobal's death.
Yeah.
Really, really extraordinary. I do think, however, that the turning of the deal, you know, where Noho Hanks's deal is off. I don't know that is him refusing to, I don't know why, what he was thinking that Fuchs was going to do with John or not do, but I don't think that it wasn't in part driven by Noho Hank feeling some amount of shame. And sometimes when we're authentic and we bring up those feelings or we confront our past actions, you know, there can be a shame feeling that can ride right along with that. And unless there's some way to mitigate that. So I think his shame turned into anger, which then turned into, what does Yoda say? Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to
hate. Yeah. Hate leads to the dark side. Yeah.
Yes. We've got our Star Wars here as well.
Good. Well, I'll see you on Dagobah.
Right. I don't wonder if his turning on that deal, I don't know, it's open interpretation. I'd love to hear if people, you know, talk about this on the Discord or email us what they thought, what turned Hank. I don't know. What's your opinion on what turned Hank?
I think maybe he was honest with himself and he was like, wow, I am a bad guy. I have to be a little better. You know, it's. Maybe he did want to change a little bit. You know, I don't think he saw himself as a bad guy in season 1 or 2 or 3. And I think he finally thought of himself as a bad guy when he had Cristobal killed. And that was a big shift in his life. And he's been in denial since. And now he's finally waking up a little bit and being like, oh, my God, I have to fix this
right
in some way, in any way I can. Like, I can't bring Cristobal back, but maybe I could I could help somebody. I don't know. It's a complicated situation.
I don't know what Hank would have done with John. And I don't know that he knew what Fuchs was going to do with John. I don't know about you. I certainly had an assumption that John was going to be used as a deadly pawn. Is what?
As new Barry. He's the
new Barry. Well, I didn't go there. I thought it'd be more about.
I thought that Fuchs was going to take John on and make him the new Barry, like teach him how to be a hitman. That's what I thought the series was going to end with.
Huh. Okay. I can see that.
I'm really glad they didn't, because poor John. But I thought that would be on brand for Barry.
When Fuchs, I guess when he sees him on the FaceTime call, that's when he really has that turn of a moment when he realizes how shitty he was to Barry.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know,
I don't even think then. I think there was a moment where he looks at John after he's brought into the room, mm-hmm. where it's because, you know, an in-person meeting is always a little more meaningful than a Zoom call. Absolutely. We all know that nowadays.
Absolutely.
And I think seeing John in real life, just, you know, flesh and blood, that's the son of Barry, really makes him go, oh my God, I turned a child into a monster.
Right. And as he's describing how he's honest with himself about the shitty things that he had done as this quote unquote mentor and guide to young men, he in that moment is not going to repeat that. But I don't think that NoHo Hank sees that or understands that.
No. Well, but I think that Hank thinks that something nefarious would happen to John.
Agreed.
If Absolutely. He left him with Fuchs. I think I don't think he knows specifics, but I don't think he needs to make a decision based on that.
So you brought up Tarantino, and I definitely, there was a little homage there with the shootout. Reservoir Dogs style thing. Really well done too. I actually stopped and rewound it a couple of times to see positioning, and Sally's uh-huh. not in there. So we don't even know where she is.
Yeah. She's behind the column.
Right. And then it took me, to see where John was and to see that Fuchs covered John's body with his body to protect right. him.
Yeah, that was very wholesome.
Yeah.
That he saved John like that. Now, did he have to shoot Hank and start the shootout?
No. Well, Hank wasn't going to shoot. I think Hank was going to, Hank shot first. I mean, Fuchs shot first, but Hank drew first.
Okay, so are we doing a Han shot first?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, all right.
That's what I'm questioning.
All right. Lucas were going to do the remasters of this, maybe he'll change it up and Hank will have gotten a shot in first, and then Fuchs kills him because Fuchs got to be a good guy now because he's a good uncle.
Well,
and that's just what's going to happen.
Well, we have to talk about the ending of this because there's such a great commentary about how we tell our modern myths and which is another level that the show works on, is that there is this retelling of things so that they're heroic and gussied up more.
Yeah.
I was going to say that dolly shot where they're tracking along with all the bodies. That was hilarious with the guy's leg gone and the guts hanging out. It's funny and horrific at the same time. So perfect Barry style comedy in that.
And it was very kind of Fuchs to hide John's eyes.
Yes, exactly. You know? Yeah. And that's when we really start to see, whoa, something's going differently with Fuchs here.
Yeah. Yeah, because if Fuchs was going to train him to be a killer, maybe he'd be like, all right, this is what happens when you kill somebody.
Right.
Yeah, grotesque. Well, David, any more thoughts on this scene?
Oh, many thoughts, but I think we need to move on.
We sure do. Well, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we will move on to Barry's plotline.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
And we're back. Barry goes into a big box store and buys two semi-automatic rifles, which prove to be cumbersome driving accessories. He goes to Hank's office and prays to God that he's going to die tonight, but to keep Sally and John safe and to deliver him to heaven. Before he can go in, Fuchs delivers John to him. In a hotel, Sally tells Barry to turn himself in, but Barry doesn't think that's God's plan for him. In the morning, Barry finds his hotel room empty. Thinking Sally went to Jean's, he bursts into Jean's house and demands that Tom tell him where they are. Realizing they aren't there and swayed by Tom's arguments, Barry decides to turn himself in just in time to be shot by a framed Jean Cousineau. He turns to Jean, says, "Oh, wow," and is shot in the head and killed. I loved this whole arc.
Yeah.
I loved it. I mean, just Jean jumping the gun one more time.
Right.
And ruining his life.
Right.
By just jumping the gun and being kind of incompetent and being more focused on his ego of "you killed my girlfriend" than on even self-interest, even getting out of prison. It's crazy.
And he was competent in the most incompetent way, which I guess you could say is part of his career.
Right.
He is an excellent actor. He's an excellent acting coach and teacher.
Right.
You know, getting people there. But yet he is so encumbered by all of the, like you say, his ego and his inability to see the bigger picture. The fact that he killed a notorious killer, a man who is a natural born killer in many ways. John is a, you know, an expert.
Barry.
Yeah, sorry. Yes, Barry is
But John, thankfully, is not an expert.
Yeah, John thankfully is not. But Barry is a very efficient killing machine. Cousineau was able to take him out quite effectively.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. And really bullseye. Now, let me tell you about a Reddit theory I saw today.
Okay.
They said that this whole season they've been hinting at what was going to happen with the Abraham Lincoln references.
Uh-huh.
There was this post on Reddit. You can go find it on the Barry subreddit. I don't know who sent it. But basically, first of all, they were doing that whole Lincoln thing earlier in the season.
Yep.
And there was also a whole thing about Daniel Day-Lewis, who played Lincoln in
the Lincoln movie. Oh, that's true. Oh, I didn't make that connection. That's that's totally obvious now.
And how did Lincoln die?
Shot.
He was shot in the head by an actor.
It's all right there. Oh my Lord, I can't believe I missed all of that. That's
hilarious. The play that Lincoln was watching was the Something Cousins.
Okay.
Gene Cousineau.
Okay.
There's something there too. Basically this whole Lincoln thing has been hinted at all season.
Was it a pearl-handled pistol that Lincoln was shot with?
I don't know. That was a crazy pistol, though.
Did you notice the note that was in the box?
No.
So it's a note from Rip Torn. I believe it was a note from Rip Torn, who's a great American actor. And it was basically don't shoot your wee-wee off. I forget what that, you know, don't shoot your pecker off or something like that. And I'm not sure what the connectivity is there. I'm sure the Reddits have all of that.
Yeah.
But there's got to be there's two points where you can freeze frame and clearly see the note and read the message and all the stuff.
Okay.
So I'm sure that there's some interconnectivity to that as well.
Do you think that Gene was going to commit suicide before Barry walked in?
I considered the possibility. I definitely considered the possibility. I don't know what pathways out, but I don't know if his ego would allow him to do that.
I don't know because he did seem really desperate. He did seem like the walls were finally closing in on him.
Yeah. And he did go for the gun room long before he knew that Barry was on his way to come to get him. So
yeah, that was not a reaction to Barry.
Right.
Yeah. So I think he considered it. That's my headcanon is he considered it because he felt very trapped.
Can we talk about the "oh wow" line too?
Yeah, yeah, please.
It was very, what's the word? It's when Barry is in a particular mode, he sounds very serious. There's a different tonality to his voice, and there's a different cadence and direction and how he acts. And in this one, it was the playful non-killer Barry, the young kid on the stage who was looking for a new way of life, or, you know, trying to find something, or when he was talking to Sally. And it's a very much higher tone voice and a much younger sounding voice. So he goes, oh, wow.
Like, yeah, it was almost Owen Wilson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's my question for you. Has Barry ever been shot before?
I don't think so.
So I think he was actually surprised of, I think I just got shot.
Exactly.
I mean, there was that and the whole, my fake daddy just shot me. And there's a lot there. There's a lot there. And Bill Hader did an excellent job sort of capturing all of that. It was like surprise and awe and just bewilderment and shock. And then just gone. He's just gone. And it was such a sad, small death for a character that wanted the night before to go out in a blaze of glory, was basically like, God, I am your servant, and I'm going to go down bringing glory to the world, and I will be by your rightful side, doing this whole, you know, almost like a Catholic mass in his car, with the amount of the amount of you know, quotes from the Bible he's using.
Right.
And it was a perfect ending for Barry, because in the end, he did not get to be the glorious great man that he wanted to be. He was actually a small man, and he had a small death, and he was killed by someone who he thought loved him.
Right. But who he's traumatized and tortured and driven insane, even more insane than he already was.
Yeah.
The framing of it too was amazing. And then what they did from the scene transition, as they're panning back from Kusinau sitting on the couch and Barry sitting in the recliner, it very much looks like the ending scene of a play.
Yeah.
You could have had the curtains drop and the lights go out in that moment, and it would have felt very natural as a play ending. And then what do they do? Boom, we jump to Sally and the kids coming out on stage there and the lights coming up in the audience. So it was a really nice through line there of the whole acting stage thing that this show has, you know, trafficked in this entire series. So yeah, that was a beautiful, brilliant way to handle that.
Yeah.
So John, I one of the things too I wanted to talk about was moral relativism.
Oh boy.
And Barry's ability to try to
move the goalpost.
What's that?
He moves the goalpost.
He moves the goalposts
all the time.
Yeah. Was that stuff present? Was the religion stuff present or in earlier seasons? I don't remember.
Oh no, this was definitely the second half of the season. Is really the first time we've discussed religion on the show, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
The most religious season 1 through 3 got was, in season 1, they do the nun priest play. They're going to do that at Ryan's funeral.
Right.
And Gene just goes, let's not do that. That always cracks me up. But yeah, we have not had that before. But I mean,
it's from the birth of his child. He found religion after John was born.
Sure. But I think religion is sort of the next step in something Barry's been doing from the beginning.
Okay.
And Barry, from the beginning, has been moving the goalpost on who he is. You know, at first he says, I'm not going to kill Ryan Madison. You know, I'm done killing. I'm done killing all over the place. And then he's like, well, maybe I'll do one more hit for the Chechens. There's always one more. You know, there's always a next goalpost of, well, after this one, I won't do it. And the whole theme of season 1, I think, and even through season 3, we heard this line, starting now. And at the end of season 1, he kills Janice Moss. He lays down and he goes, starting now.
Mm-hmm.
As in, I'm going to be a good person starting now. You know, I just killed my hero's girlfriend, and I'm going to be a good person starting now. And at the end of season three, right before he goes to kill Jim Moss, he is confronted by his war buddy, who says, "This has to stop, Barry, starting now. Like, you have to be a better person now." He's constantly getting a second chance and a third chance and a fourth chance and a fifth chance to not go past the goalposts he set for his morality. And he always fails to do that. He always goes that extra step. And all religion has done for him is not provide him salvation, but instead provide him a way to... Right, a way to work that... a way to work a mythology into his moving of the goalposts, you know, a way to say, well, I'm moving the goalposts because God says it's okay.
Well, and exactly.
That's and a dangerous says, version of religion.
I went in there last night expecting to die, but God didn't kill me. So he's got a different plan for me.
Right. Imagine so that plan now. Is turning yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, I mean, like he could do something good right now and that wouldn't be shifting the goalposts. That would be, okay, well, I have a second chance to do the right thing. Let me go do it. But he goes, no, I'm going to be a great man and God has a plan for me. And so I'm going to go do my own thing and not do anything that would harm me in any way.
And that's when, Sally realizes who he really is. And I'm surprised that they were able to get away, that he slept through their exit.
Well, he was pretty tired after
that's true.
being up all night at Jim Moss's, and he slept on the counter or next to the counter on the floor.
So again, this, you know, the show working on these different levels of social commentary on top of everything else. So we've got violence, we've got Hollywood and sort of the crassness of that. We have religion, using religion as in a morally relevant way, right. Self-relevant. We've got all these questions of authenticity and absolution. Yeah, there's just so much packed into this. It's hard to track them all. It almost feels like we need to do this as a full season recap, maybe in a year or two or something, let it cool and then come back and plumb the depths of this because there's so much going on.
A Barry retrospective.
Yeah, completely.
All right, let's move on. We've got a lot more to talk about. Sally and John are back. As Hank's hostages, Sally and John have their first real conversation. Sally tells John that they're fugitives because Barry murdered a lot of people and Sally murdered one. She tells him that they are bad people, but he's a good boy, and she's sorry for being a terrible mother. As she breaks down crying, John hugs her. After the shootout, Sally calls for John and is eventually reunited with him and Barry in a hotel room. When Barry decides not to turn himself in, Sally and John sneak out in the night. Years later, Sally accepts flowers after putting on a play at the school where she teaches drama. Another teacher asks her on a date and she declines. John goes to a friend's house and watches The Mask Collector, a movie about Barry and Jean, which reframes Barry as the hero and Jean as the villain who murdered Janice and Barry. We learn that Jean is serving life in prison as John looks on with pride for his dad.
Boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a 30-minute show, this packed in so much stuff. It's really wild.
I know.
That scene with Sally and John, it took me a couple of rounds. Again, I watched it twice to really get the impact of that. Where all season long, well, ever since we did the time jump, seeing Sally really rejecting the role of being a parent and really abdicating responsibility for John and for his education and for his, you know, physical well-being. And then to have her deliver that monologue in this way was extraordinary. It was extraordinarily shot. It was extraordinarily acted. And it was a real moving piece for that character and for Sally to come full circle. And I didn't see a redemption pathway for her. We were talking last episode. I don't know. I didn't know where she was going to go. I didn't know how she was going to get out of it.
I thought she was going to abandon John.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she didn't. I mean, I will say this though. What's the one thing she didn't say to him at all? including when he said it to her. Yeah, she never said, I love you. She didn't. And, you know, she doesn't have to say it every single time. We haven't seen their whole life. But I think that, you know, what the show, I can only go off what the show tells me, and what the show has told me is John loves his mother, and his mother is now being dutiful and now taking care of her son and trying to be there for him emotionally. But I still think she didn't want to be a mother, and I think she still doesn't want to be a mother. I think she's doing what she thinks is the right thing. She's playing a role.
Interesting. Okay. I don't know if I go 100%. I can certainly see that when she's on stage, she gets the flowers, not the actors.
Yeah. Yeah.
The, you know, and the adoration is directed at her, not the performers. And she's the one who's anxious about it when she asks John, was it good? Did it really turn out okay? Even though all the signals that she's getting from all the other sources are, you know, everybody enjoyed it and thought it was really great. Even the guy who wanted to ask her out on a date.
Who would have thunk the guy who asked her out on a date thought she did a great job?
Yeah. Well, I think to me, the way I read that bit was that life is normal.
Sure.
There's a pathway now for her just to live a normal life where she can have normal human relationships in this place, you know, in wherever middle America this is. And that she is an attractive and charismatic person.
Sure.
That this guy. So, you know, I kind of look at all of that as her, you know, coming up right, you know, if getting rolled over by the waves, right? So she's sort of coming back up to normality. But even so, she's still driven by the love of the stage and the love of, you know, that desire to be the center of attention.
And I'm glad that she is doing her own thing and not jumping back into another relationship. I know it's been years now,
mm-hmm.
but I think that Sally is in a place where she goes, my judgment with men is not great. And I'm just going to not do that anymore. Right. And I get it. I think that she's perfectly justified in that.
Yeah. That's some good growth.
Yeah. And I think Sally's grown. I think.
Yeah.
But my point is, I think that at her core, Sally would rather not be a mother. And mm-hmm. I think that she would rather be, you know, doing the famous actor thing. I think she'd be mm-hmm. rather be running a show. Something like that. But I think that she's settled into the life she has, and she's tried to create some stability for herself and John, and she's doing her duty. And if that's the best she can do, then maybe that's enough.
Well, and maybe it's the quiet and slow, what's the word I want to use? How I want to phrase this? Just the slow turning of the years that will rid her of that thing. But as we know from Frodo, you know, once you're sort of stabbed with that Morgul blade, it's hard to ever get rid of that.
Right.
You know,
it was some Frodo, wounds by the way. You were right the first time.
Yeah. Sorry, I've got all these characters jumbled up in my head. It's hard to know.
A lot of characters. When I was writing summaries tonight, and I had been watching Succession yesterday and trying to remember all those names, I'm like, okay, whose name was whose kid? And
right.
And boy, I hope I got them all right. But here we go. I want to talk about a couple more things. Just the movie itself.
Yes.
First of all, how awful was that movie? And the British Jean was amazing.
It's so good.
Completely emotionless, too.
Right.
Absolutely emotionless delivery. Amazingly bad.
Great title.
Great
bad title, right? You know, like within the awfulness of all of it, The Mask Collector is a perfect title for this.
I loved the low budget scene of Barry walking in on the Chechens, and this idea that Gene was running a drug ring out of that theater when he's just a bumbling idiot is just so funny to the audience.
Right.
So yeah, I really liked the movie. And I what I liked more than the movie itself was sort of what it symbolized, which is, you know, John heard from his mother, your dad killed a lot of people, and I killed one person. Now, by the way, Sally did not commit murder, in my opinion. You know, she...
Self-defense.
You know, it was manslaughter at best.
Okay.
Maybe you could say she went too far in the self-defense, but I think any court is going to at least not convict her of murder, because there was no, you know, she didn't seek this guy out. She didn't like go attack this guy. This was her getting out of a desperate situation.
Right.
And now she carries around this guilt. And I think maybe she understands it as murder. Maybe she thought it was easier to explain to John as murder. But yeah, I think, her framing of it as they are bad people, and then John choosing to believe instead in this mythology of Barry that was created in the movie and that has sort of taken on the public consciousness, that really shows sort of, one, how we talk about the dead, how we talk about quote unquote great men, you know, Barry put to rest with full honors, you know, now remembered as a great man. And it's just so perfect to see him just looking on with pride, like, yeah, now this is a story I can get behind. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get behind the story that my dad was a murderer. I want to know that my dad was actually a hero who was wrongfully accused of murder and then killed by the guy who framed him. That's a lot easier to swallow as a kid.
So you're saying that John is totally taken in by this mythologized version of the
Mary. I think that's what his facial expression was telling me.
Interesting.
At the end. Okay. You don't think so?
I don't know. I don't know how far I was going to take John. It was a very interesting setup, because when his teenage friend said, "Are you ready for this?" and the way that he asked, you know, his mom, "Hey, can I, you know, spend the night?" to me, that all read like, we're going to sneak out, we're going to go get some booze, we're going to go do some stuff, what have you. But maybe I'm projecting my childhood onto these fictional characters. But that's certainly how I read it. And so when they sat down to watch The Mask Collector, I'm like, what is this, some sort of horror story, and John doesn't like horror, and this I was really confused when it, you know, as it turned, as it played out, of the story of Barry, I was really surprised. I thought it was a brilliant device and a way to turn the whole narrative arc of the entire series, to mythologize and to whitewash, and even to the point of when the on-screen Barry rescues them and he comes in with all his tactical gear and his vest, and it feels very much Man on Fire type of stuff. Got to, you know, be the alpha and save my family. Get behind me. So I'm watching this and I'm watching John's reaction, and I really didn't know what to make of it. I didn't, because I'm dealing with my own disbelief. So I wasn't sure what I was transferring onto John versus what John was portraying in that actor's portrayal. So I don't really know where John rides on this. I think I need to go back and watch it a third time.
I think, you know, when I look at my experience of, you know, how I like to remember my dad is, you know, my dad and I didn't always get along, but what do I try to remember is I try to remember the good of him and the good of our relationship. And I think that John's the same way. I think we all are that way, right? We want to remember our deceased loved ones for the good that they did and the good moments we had with them, unless it was something like extreme abuse or something like that, of course. But in general, I think people want to remember the good in people, and they want to cherish the good memories. And for Barry, first of all, Barry set him up as remembering the great men with flaws.
Right. Yeah. The whole Lincoln thing, which we were scratching our heads a little bit at when that was happening.
Right. And second, I think that John is just choosing to believe in this mythology. And I mean, who's it going to hurt? You know, who's it going to hurt for him to look up to his dad who's gone as a hero? Like, he's not going to learn anything from him now. So, let the kid grow up with a false image that makes him feel a little better. Good for him.
Brilliant way to resolve the whole story, though. Really great. And again, you know, digging into the social commentary of Hollywood and how we mythologize things, especially in the post-Vietnam era, how we really try to hold up anyone who served, especially anyone who served and seen combat. Thank you for your service and your sacrifice, all of that kind of stuff. And then to throw all of that mythology and hero worship onto the screen and to tell a very Hollywood style story. That is exactly what Hollywood loves to do, is to take something that is probably a lot more morally complex, a lot less glamorous in most of the details, clean it up, and then present it to us in this really pristine and aspirational, give it this big, huge aspirational shine to it.
Right. Yeah. You're right. It was a brilliant way to end the series. Ellen Sepinwall didn't like it, but I did. And
hey, another one where we can mark up saying that we don't agree with Sepinwall.
I know. I know. He did like the show. I will say that. Right. He did praise the show generally. I think he just didn't like the way it ended on this, on John. And I like the way it ended on John. I think that Barry's legacy is John.
Yeah.
And to see how John remembers Barry, that's a perfect way to end the series.
And to see this young kid who really was horribly traumatized by being so sheltered and living such a weird, quixotic life, to then going through this really horrific moment of being captured and then a shootout between rival gangs.
Yeah.
To then land where he's at, you know, seemingly well adjusted and dealing with trying to integrate what he wants to feel about his father. And like you said, to have the best thought about his father, no matter the fact that his father was a horrible monster.
Right.
Yeah, that's the brilliance of the show is these paradoxes and these turning over these tropes and turning things upside down. It's brilliant. I think they absolutely nailed this finale. I think it was a perfect, there's no way I could have predicted it. It blows. I'm delighted. I'm surprised. I'm delighted because I'm surprised, because there was no way that I could have predicted. Yeah. And so I was really in the moment. And so as the story unfolded and as it ended, I was like, wow, that was a well done story, told well, ended well, ended on its own terms, the way that they wanted to end it, and done so confidently with such artistry. Yeah, I'm going to just go into gush mode again.
Turn
me off here.
Well, David, now that you're done gushing, let's bring in some feedback, which is all my fault, because it's two feedback items, and they're both a correction for something that you did correct on the podcast, but I edited out accidentally. So, Rocky and DJB both have to say that it was not Tony Danza on Happy Days who played Chachi. It was Scott Baio.
Correct.
And you did correct yourself. I can attest to it. I heard the audio, but
release the tapes.
Release the tapes. Yeah, like Nixon. If you want to watch White House Plumbers.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you for the correction. Sorry that it was not included in the original podcast, but it was there.
Do you think that we should intentionally drop incorrect statements or hot controversial hot topics?
So people write in?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Let's see.
Hot
dog is a sandwich.
Right. At least people are listening. They're paying attention. Yeah. This is a good sign. So thank you, Rocky and DJB. We know that you're out there and that you're paying attention to our words as they're recorded on these microphones.
DJB adds, the Danza reference calls back to when Gene was talking with his agent that he was convinced Danza was mafia.
Mm-hmm.
So that's funny. That's a fun little callback.
And I'm sure there's a lot more Easter eggs. I'm sure if we, did some drift net fishing in the old Reddit waters, we'd come up with a lot more. But yeah, I really do think that this series could be easily a retrospective podcast from, 1 through 4. Especially with the tonal shifts that the show goes through.
Yeah.
Because
it's a very different show from season 1 through 4. I think seasons 1 and 2 are relatively the same tone.
Right.
And seasons 3 and 4 are sort of one tone too, although the end of season 4 gets very different too.
Yeah, that's for sure.
All right. time for our outro. Again, if you'd like to continue the conversation with us, the season's over, the podcasts are over, but we're still on Discord. So head to the show notes if you want to join that Discord and chat with us about Barry. For now, let's talk about our patrons, David.
Yes, let's do that. Let us give thanks to Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H., Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Patina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Lavinia T., Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa. They are our Lore Master Patreon supporters. They are our top tier, and they provide a significant amount of resources for us to be able to produce these shows. So thank you all. And thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers, because Patreon is a much better way to support us. Ad revenues are fickle these days, and so we really depend on all of our Patreon supporters to help us make this podcast. We are coming up on our 1 year podcasting anniversary. It's hard to believe. July 11th is our technical birthday. What we're going to do in the end of July, everyone who's subscribed is going to get a thank you sticker that we're in production on right now. We've just got some final details nailed down. And once we get into the next phase, I'm hopefully going to be able to show everyone a version of the sticker before long. It's going to have a very cool elven statement underneath our Lorehounds banner. And we've got a whole bunch of other cool features that we're going to start turning on our Patreon. And we'll start talking about those in June as we get those details nailed down. So speaking of June, John, what do we have coming up for our listeners?
Well, June is going to be a little bit of a lighter month, although that means still about 12 podcasts. But
I am looking forward to having a little bit of a break. Doing three shows has been a pace.
We're looking at July and August, and those are going to be crazy again. So I think that we need a nice little break here.
Yeah.
But this week we have a lot of wrap-ups happening. We just did an episode of Silmarillion Stories of Eldamar and the Princes of the Adalia with special guest Aaron from the Lord of the Rings podcast.
He's
a really great conversation.
Oh, my Lord.
Super knowledgeable, made a lot of deep connections with Rings of Power, with the Lord of the Rings books and movies. And I'm grateful he came on. I think we're going to be chatting with him again sometime.
Definitely. And I think we're going to hop over to his podcast too, and definitely going to do some more stuff with him in the future.
Absolutely. So check out his podcast too, if you're interested. We also are wrapping up White House Plumbers and Ted Lasso this week, because everything's ending at the same time. And then for next week, we are doing Star Wars Visions Volume 2. We're going to do a one episode recap of that whole season. And you, David, are going to be reviewing Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Sorry,
I
can't even say the title. The Spider-Verse with Jean and Alicia. I think that's going to be a fun one. I don't think I'm going to make it out of the house to see that one. But I think it will be great.
I've already got my tickets for Friday.
Very nice. And yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about it, because I love the Spider-Man universe. Well, we have one other thing we need to talk about. We've got a new member of the Lorehounds network, and that is Alicia. You probably heard her on a bunch of our podcasts on Star Wars and the MCU universe. And she's doing a podcast on Silo, the Apple TV Plus show. That's basically Lost, but with a bunch of other Westworldy vibes. And it's a mystery box show about a dystopian world with a lot of twists and turns and great character moments. The dialogue is super tight. The production is really amazing. I'm really enjoying it. I have been out on mystery box shows for a long time, and this is the first one where I'm actually pretty intrigued.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that she's covering it, because I need a podcast to keep up with it, because there's so many threads going on in it. So
I'm glad that I'm enjoying it too, because I can now just go back to watching television and listening to a podcast. Right. It's been really fun.
Well, we're very happy to have her in the Lorehounds family. Check out her podcast, Wool Shift Dust, which you can find in the show notes of this podcast. Go over there, show her some love, send in your feedback. It always helps. give her a rating and review. And you will hear her again on the next week MC Universe podcast. So thanks to everyone for listening to this season of Barry with us. I hope you'll join us for another show. And I hope you'll join our Discord so you can chat with us about TV in the long term.
Well, John, this has been a really great podcast to record with you. I really enjoyed this series. I'm really glad that you were a Barry stan and we're talking it up, because I liked the show, but I don't know that I liked it enough to podcast about it, but I'm really glad we covered it. I think it's an extraordinary piece of television. So I hope everyone enjoyed coming along with us. And yeah, we'll see you on another podcast.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a 5-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at Rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at Rinse.com. That's Rinse.com.